This is a reading of a cycle of lectures by Rudolf Steiner, The Evolution of the World and of Humanity. This is after the last lecture in the evening, an extract from the concluding address. We are living at a time when all sorts of signs can be seen testifying to the necessity for modern civilization to receive a spiritual impulse, and how little that which came over from olden times is now able to carry it fruitfully forward. It must fall back unless it receives a new spiritual impetus. I must say that as the opportunity presents itself of speaking here tonight in connection with what has already been said concerning what is necessary for the times, I have great pleasure in doing so. In this morning's lecture, I had to point out how civilization itself brings about a sort of occult imprisonment, and that the whole spiritual life is in more danger in this respect than is generally supposed. We can point to this danger everywhere. I referred this morning to the lecture given by Sir Oliver Lodge a short time ago in England at a very important gathering. I pointed out that it can be clearly seen in this lecture how even in the most abstract science there are longings remaining in the subconscious, but which, if rightly understood and coming from a right disposition, will lead to that which, I say this in all humility, spiritual science is really able to give. If we follow up such things as these, we can see what it is that spiritual science must say to them. On the other hand, one of the most remarkable phenomena arising from the disposition and mode of thought wholly based on official modern science has appeared in a notable book by Sir Oliver Lodge under the title of Raymond, about the soul of his son after death. I need only mention the facts, which are well known here. The book relates how his son Raymond, who fell in the war, communicated by means of a medium, saying things which Sir Oliver Lodge reveals and which deeply affected the sorrowing father. When this book appeared, written by the celebrated Sir Oliver Lodge, about Raymond Lodge, the world was astonished, for in it he referred to the spiritual world in a profoundly scholarly way, springing from the most conscientious and exact modern thinking. A great mass of documentary evidence was collected to prove the possibility of getting into touch with the spiritual universe by means of mediumship, along lines analogous to any of the modern sciences. The world was especially struck by the circumstance that Sir Oliver Lodge was told by the soul of Raymond, through the medium, of the existence of a photograph which was taken of Raymond and his companions at the front in France. Two negatives had been taken, as is often done, for the photographer is not always so careful as in our latest photographs here, when three plates were taken without our having changed our places or turned our heads to the right or left. Two photographs in succession were taken of Raymond and his soldier comrades, and in the second, as is often done, the photographer slightly changed the positions. Nothing was known in England of the existence of the second one. The photographs had not yet arrived, and Raymond died before they came. The book states that the soul of Raymond spoke to Sir Oliver and other members of the family and told them of this other photograph. No one in England knew of these photographs. But when they arrived 3 weeks later, everything in them confirmed what had been said down to the smallest detail of the altered positions and attitudes. What could be more striking than this description written down by the medium as coming from the soul of the dead and describing these photographs, which had not at that time been seen by anyone and did not reach England till some time after? Nevertheless, it was at this point that a dreadful error crept in. Everyone who has explored these realms is aware that under certain circumstances there are possibilities of prevision. What the medium, sitting with that circle, saw when she fixed her eyes on the pictures, which only arrived later, could be seen by her in advance, without any necessary connection with the soul of the dead. This prevision was certainly of an exceptionally tender and intimate nature, but prevision it was. It does not suffice that a man should be a modern scientist to criticize the revelations of the spiritual world in the right way. Everything that comes from this realm, even this excellent, earnest, and exact work of Sir Oliver Lodge, tends rather to lead one away from the true comprehension of the spiritual world than toward it. The methods of research and thinking employed by natural science today are such that even when it is desired to investigate the spiritual, recourse is made to the methods of the laboratory, and every step is taken along the lines of the material. The purely spiritual path, as described here, can alone lead to true perception. Anyone who believes that he can enter the spiritual world by following the former path may certainly enter therein. But that is the spiritual world which plays its part on the physical plane, and what was described as apparently projected from the spiritual world was the prevision of two things occurring in the physical world. Certainly the physical world is everywhere permeated by the spiritual, but we mistake the relation between the earthly and the super-earthly world unless we have learned to follow the true spiritual path of research. Thus, as I pointed out this morning, to create only in accordance with the thought of natural science, with the customary thought of the day, builds the walls of these occult prisons. Let me read that again. Thus, as I pointed out this morning, to create only in accordance with the thought of natural science, with the customary thought of the day, builds the walls of these occult prisons. When a man is imprisoned within these walls, all endeavors made to pierce the veil lead him astray. For instead of representing the truth, they put forward dreadful errors, which lead him further and further away from the truth, especially if his heart is much concerned in the result, as was the case with what was related of Raymond Lodge. In these domains, where there is such a strong response from the heart, because the heart participates so strongly, and where it may so easily intervene in what may very likely be a human prejudice in favor of its hopes in the sphere where the spirit begins to speak, we must use all possible means to prevent a closing in upon us of the spiritual walls of occult captivity. These things would not be mentioned here if it were not that the very serious state of the times makes it necessary to do so. The truth is that mankind needs to make an energetic step forward to the spiritual. Many questions have been put to me during this summer course, some of which could not be fully answered, not because the subject was too difficult, but because the time has not yet come in the evolution of mankind when it is possible to speak of many things without arousing prejudice. This applies to the question asked about the spiritual relations of the different nations, and as to the state of affairs in the spiritual world when one nation conquers another and brings it into subjection. Of course, spiritual science is well able to give competent information on such subjects, but believe me, the times are not yet ready for the discussion of these things quite without prejudice, or for acceptance of the final consequences of such truths as the answer to this question would involve. We should ask ourselves whether the external point of view of one nation having brought another into subjection is the only way the matter should be regarded. The subjection of one nation to another is absolutely a physical relation pertaining to the material affairs of the world. It sometimes escapes notice that the nation which has made another materially dependent upon it has become spiritually dependent upon the conquered one. That, however, is but one of the first of these truths which must become familiar to the whole civilized globe. Only when we really have the inner courage to admit the real spiritual truths can we acquire universal understanding of such things, which will then attain their full significance in practical life. This, in the last resort, applies also to the question as to whether there are individuals in the world today who are in possession of the higher truths, and who may perhaps be in relation with one another. I have already indicated that the point is not so much whether truths can be given to the world by certain individuals, as how far the world is ready to receive these truths. I have referred to various hindrances blocking the way today, which can to some extent be expressed by saying, the Bodhisattva is indeed waiting, but a sufficient number of men must make themselves ready to understand him. Therefore, when the question is put, do those who have spiritual knowledge communicate that knowledge to man? I cannot but reply, the external printing of letters on paper signifies nothing. I only want to mention that much may be printed in alphabetical letters on paper today, concealing the profoundest wisdom, but the question always is, are these words of wisdom understood? There are many means of understanding, and many such are used, but a reciprocal understanding of those men who have something to say, something coming from higher worlds, was more easy of accomplishment in the days when such teaching was given from holy sanctuaries, such as there are here in the Druid circles. The thought vibrations from such circles moved through the world at that time without encountering the waves of wireless telegraphy. Here again I am not speaking in a reactionary sense against wireless telegraphy, which of course is a material blessing to mankind. The point is that if spiritual communications are really to travel through the world today, much stronger forces are now necessary when the spiritual waves encounter the waves of the wireless than were formerly required when such was not the case. We must realize that precisely in our own age, when our material culture has reached such a height for the blessing of mankind, it is necessary that the spiritual should be inscribed more intensely, with more forceful intensity, in the hearts of men, and travel forth again from those hearts. Our visit here was a really good opportunity for this, for we have lived in an atmosphere in which there actually still radiates wondrous things from these ancient sanctuaries. I was able to refer to this in the course of the lectures. The choice of this place was therefore a happy one, for here that which was present in Central and Northern Europe, before the mystery of Golgotha passed through the world, was able in a certain sense to come to life again spiritually. It had waited for the mystery of Golgotha, and could not find any means of continuing when Christianity came up from the south, as was described this morning, and in a sense it is still waiting. It may truly be said that when one ascends to that wonderful solitude in which stands that circle of stones, one can still perceive the real echoes of what once worked with such strong power in these northern regions of Europe. There were many things in that ancient stream of power which can no longer exist today because humanity must go forward, and modern progress could not endure them. They would hinder its freedom. Thus it is that because, in a certain sense, the profound occult knowledge which was once taught in the holy mysteries has gradually passed into cosmic memories, which hover like luminous clouds over the crests of the mountains, among which these holy relics are enshrined, that special atmosphere is spread over everything undertaken here for our spiritual life. That's the end of part 14.